welcome to this edition of YCT Matters. I'm Carol Platt-Liebau, president of Yankee Institute, and I'm delighted to welcome you today because we have a very special guest. He's an entrepreneur, leader, trainer, author, writer, and inventor with 32 patents. You may have seen his picture on the vans that travel throughout Connecticut, and his employees may well have been inside your home. One of his many enterprises has fixed fully 1 in 8 single-family homes in Connecticut. He knows a little something about running a business in Connecticut. His company now has 450 employees here, along with 2,000 total employees in 32 states. Our guest sits at the hub of a network of enterprises, including 8 different home services, a large marketing agency, manufacturing, and a school of entrepreneurship known as Contractor Nation. He also writes a daily blog that's read by over 20,000 people each morning. We're honoring him with our Connecticut's Future Award this weekend at our Champions of Freedom Gala because he is truly one of the people shaping the future of our state and beyond. You've probably guessed it by now. Today's guest is the one and only Larry Janeski, the owner and founder of Connecticut Basement Systems. Larry, welcome to YCT Matters.
Thank you very much, Carol. Great to be here with you.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. And, you know, it's always really fun when we have a guest like you, because not only can I learn something from you about how to get 20,000 people to read what we write each day, but, you know, you are the quintessence of a lot of the things that Yankee Institute admires. The entrepreneurship, for sure. And so let's, as they say in The Sound of Music, start at the very beginning. You started your first business at the age of 17 out of your own home, right?
Probably, you know, earlier than that. I mean, I remember selling burpee seeds door to door when I was 8 years old.
Nice.
You know, and go around the block and the box is almost empty and you got, you know, seeds that no one wants, you know, some sort of weird looking squash or something, and you know, like, I gotta reorder, you know. And then, you know, paper route, big paper route, 140 papers every day, 7 days a week, you know, and you know, various other things. But and anyway, when I graduated high school, Bullet Havens in Bridgeport, I grew up in Bridgeport, and you know, college was not a option, you know, for me and our family. You know, no one ever talked about college. No one ever went to college. And we had to make some money. So so I went right to work. The real story is I got a job for $5 an hour for a kitchen and bath company in Stratford. And he wanted me to be a gopher and I wanted to be a carpenter. And we disagreed on that. So after a month, he fired me. And but it was bound to happen anyway. So I put an ad in the paper, carpentry, call Larry, no job too small. And I get calls and show up every day. And, you know, every time that somebody said they needed something done, it was new, you know, and I didn't know how to do it. You know, I've retiled my, you know, around this bathtub in this rental property or something, you know, and I don't know how to do that. So before the internet, you know, you go down the lumber yard, you ask the guy behind the counter, how do I do that? He says, well, use this trowel and use this mastic and use this. And okay. And I go back and do it, you know? And so, but I was an Eagle Scout. So I had 56 merit badges and, you know, I knew that I could learn something. If there was something that, you know, I needed to know, I could learn. I just had to find the right source. And so I, you know, if you show up, right, people call and you show up. I mean, that's a lot of the battle right there, because a lot of people don't show up, you know. And then when I was 18, I got a call, hey, can you build a house for me? And you know, I said, yeah, I can build a house for you, you know, but I'm 18 years old. So, you know, if that's a problem, you know, let me know. And he's like, you know, on the phone, his long silence, he's weighing his options, you know, and, all the real carpenters were busy because it was a building boom in Connecticut at that time in 1983. And, houses were being framed up everywhere, you know, and it's just something you just don't see anymore in Connecticut. Our population is flat for, you know, really ever since then. And, so it was like one of those things. I'm in the right business at the right time, you know, like, Bill Gates, when the world started getting computers, but didn't have any software, you know, or, Steve Jobs, or, you know, these guys that were good at what they do, but they're also really helped by, you know, right business, right time. And so I got a chance to build my first house when I was 18 years old, you know, when I was 18, and my helper was 17. He just graduated Bullard Havens that I had been out of for 1 year. And my younger brother was 14 years old on summer vacation from Bullard Havens. And the three of us built this house. You know, we showed up every day, 3,000 square foot contemporary with a crazy roof and a sunken living room and cathedral ceilings in every room. And it was just, it wasn't an easy house to frame, but I figured if anybody could do it, I could do it. And so, it took us 6 weeks to frame, roof, side it, put the windows and doors in, put the decks, a deck on. And, I would go to other houses that were being framed, and, it was summertime, so it stayed light out late. And I would show up, and at like 7 o'clock, all the guys were gone. Right. And I'd say, okay, they're building the first floor. Okay. How'd they lay this out? How'd they frame the stairwell? How'd they do this? How'd they do that? And I'd go to my job site and do the same thing. The next day I look, okay, now they're framing the first floor walls. How'd they do that? How'd they lay this out? How they, frame these big windows. How'd they do this and that? Okay. So I go to my job and do the same thing. And I just, if anybody can do it, I can do it. So
hearing you say that, it just, it sort of makes me want to cry. It is such a wonderful, wonderful story. And I wish more young people knew it's there. If you're willing to work for it, if you're willing to go and learn, if you know you have that kind of power. I mean, you were a young man, you were 18 years old. And here you are with a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old, and you're building a house.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't, 7 in the morning, 7 in the evening, you're out, you're looking, you're learning, you're building. It's really a beautiful story.
Yeah. And I tell the story and people say, oh, that's BS. You can't build a house when you're 18 years old, and so forth. And I think they're pointing to, regulation or things like that, that, we have so much more of.
Well, that's part of the problem.
Yeah. And but the fact is that carpenters are not licensed trades like plumbers and electricians and HVAC contractors. And so, you can do it. You can learn to do it. You don't have to put in so many years of apprenticeship and journeyman and, be able to pull a permit. I wasn't the one that pulled the permit on that job anyway, but I could have, because right after, the guy on the left wanted me to build his house, and the guy on the right wanted me to build his house. This is on Orne Oak Lane in Stratford, right across from the country club, and these are nice houses.
Of course.
And so then a developer was driving by, and he said, he could sell as many houses as he could build, and he just needed more framers. So he stopped by, and I built a house for him. Then he introduced me to this developer, and I was framing houses for him in my own business. I realized, I'm not making much money here.
Working hard. And
maybe I'm getting taken advantage of, the young guy, they're not paying me enough or whatever, So I started buying lots and going to the bank and getting the builder's mortgage, right? Mm-hmm. This is for all the banking regulation, right? So I was getting a builder's mortgage to build this house, and they were giving me, progress payments as I built the house. So now I'm the general contractor. I'm 21 years old, and I'm the general contractor, and I'm responsible for everything from digging a hole in the ground to, water and sewer and the well and the foundation and all the way up. And I'm learning, incredible amount. But, I remember Bill Nimmons over at Shelton Savings Bank, he would give me a you know, $200,000 builder's mortgage, you know? And, you know, it was, I learned a lot, and I never defaulted on a payment in my life. I remember one house I built it for a friend of my dad's, and he wasn't a very good guy, but, turned out, but, it was a duplex in Bridgeport, and I built this house for $180,000, and it cost me $280,000. You know, this is 1980, whatever, five or something. And so I was $100,000 in debt after I built this house, you know.
Wow.
And I worked for the next year, and every dollar that I made, I paid every subcontractor off. And so, yeah, you learn lessons and stuff. So I had a 5-year career building houses that way. And then the last house I built had a wall crack that was leaking in the foundation. And I had to figure out how to fix it. And the building bubble at the time was collapsing, you know. And so, you know, there's talk about, you know, credit and, you know, government meddling and so forth. But, you know, they created a bubble, and then the bubble burst, right? And so I had a house that was the one of four houses in the subdivision, four different builders, and mine was on the worst lot, and it sold, and then the deal fell through because of credit, and then it sold, and the deal fell through because of credit, and I'm like, I'm a little tiny guy. I mean, I'm a kid, and I can't afford to pay, you know, the interest on this builder's mortgage for very long. I got to sell this house. So finally, it sold a third time, and all the other three houses didn't sell at all. I'm like, oh man, this thing's got to stick. And then they said, well, there's a wall crack in the foundation and you got to fix it. So they were going to bail on the deal. And I said, whoa, the contract says I have 30 days to fix anything. So I had to figure out how to fix this wall crack. So, you know, those days it was hard to do research. There was no internet.
Right.
And, you know, I subscribe to Builder Magazine, and they send you this card deck of advertising, you know, and from different suppliers and whatever. And it said, hey, you know, start be a dealer for us, and, you know, in the basement waterproofing business. And I'm like, oh, well, I call them and I said, how do I fix this wall crack? And they didn't have a good solution, but I made it work. And sold the house. And I said, well, what am I going to do now? It seemed like going in reverse if it's to go back and do remodeling jobs again. You know, I couldn't build another house because it wasn't going to sell. Everybody's getting stuck with houses that they built and they couldn't sell. So I said, well, let me get into the basement waterproofing business.
And so was this 1987?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I said, here's a place I can make my mark. Of course, you don't know anything about it when you get into something new. You're an amateur. And, but, you know, there was established businesses that had been there for a long time, but I said, you know, these guys aren't really that good. I mean, they're better than me, but I think, you know, I mean, I had to do something, you know, necessity sometimes, you know,
right. Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say.
So I became a dealer for this one company out of Illinois that had these products, but I realized that they weren't very good products. After a year, they had trouble. And two and a half years, I became one of their biggest dealers. And I made a training program because they would have their dealers call me, and, you know, their dealers called them and said they have questions, right? And they would say, well, I don't know. Larry in Connecticut is doing pretty good. Why don't you call him for advice? So these guys were calling me from all over the country for advice. I'm like, geez, I just started, you know, a couple of years ago. I'll do my best, you know? So I made this training program for these, for their dealers. I made a training program and I worked hard on it. And I called them up and I said, would you support, you know, me going out for a week and training your dealer so you could sell more products, right? And they would pay me like a consulting fee for the week. And they said, well, send it to us and we'll check it out. So I sent it to them in this binder, and they didn't respond. And I'm like, you know, I called back a month later. Hey, so what do you think? Well, you know, we're still looking at it. Okay. Another month goes by. They didn't respond. I'm calling them back. And finally, a guy whispers in the phone, hey, if you get your resources together, I think you could buy this company. Buy this company. I'm like 26 years old I was 25 years old. And I thought they were this big company. They had 125 dealers all over the country, you know.
Right.
I go out there to tour their company. And I'm, you know, talking with people in the different departments, and I had no money. I had no idea how I ever do this, but I went out to check it out, and I got in the accountant's office, right? And she starts crying in front of me. She says, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I don't know if I'm going to lose my job. And I'm like, oh boy. So the owner comes in and says, you've seen enough. Okay.
Yeah, so, when your staff is crying, I bet you have.
I drove all the way out to Illinois, and I'm there for like an hour. He's saying, you've seen enough. He takes me to downtown Canton, Illinois, and there's a little square with little two-story buildings around it. And he takes me upstairs into a little office, you know, kind of like an attorney's office on the second mm-hmm. floor or something. There's nobody in it. There's two desks, one phone, and nothing else, no other objects. Okay.
Right. So
he puts me in the office and he says, call your money men in Connecticut and make me an offer. And he leaves.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
They're like, what am I going to do now?
And who exactly are these money men I'm supposed to be calling?
So I'm like, oh my God. So what am I going to do? So I'm sitting at the desk thinking, all right, well, I open the desk drawer. This office is not occupied. There's nobody in it. There's not a pen on a desk. There's not a pad. There's nothing. Okay. A phone and a desk. And on the desk, there's a little slip of paper, and it's a coupon for this waterproofing company. And it says, we do basement waterproofing with no digging. In Bloomington, Illinois, and I was in Canton, Illinois, and I'm like, huh, I thought these guys said they're the only ones that could do this work with no digging. So who do I call? I call that guy in Bloomington. And I said, you do it with no digging. How do you do that? He said, with a baseboard system. I'll bore you with the techniques. But I said, I thought these guys were the only ones that had that. He said, no, sir. I said, well, do you make that stuff? He said, yes, sir. I said, can you make it for me? Yes, sir. I'll be right over. And so I left there and I drove to Bloomington and I saw this guy that could be my supplier.
Right.
So I said, okay, bye-bye. I went back to Connecticut and I started a dealer network to sell this product to other basement waterproofing contractors because I thought I could do it better than these guys could. Today, we don't even use that kind of system, but that's how I got started. And basically, I would call. So I was a basement waterproofing contractor, and I would call other basement waterproofing contractors all over the country and say, hey, I'm Larry from Connecticut. I have this product that can maybe give you a competitive advantage. Would you like to be a dealer for me? And so I started getting dealers, and over time, I developed better and better products. Today, I have 32 patents on things. And had some real breakthroughs, some huge breakthroughs, completely changed the basement waterproofing industry and what it does for people. And at the time, you know, if you had a wet basement, you would get it fixed, but it was only a matter of time that before you got flooded again. Because when your sump pump failed, you were going to get flooded again. And today,
and I will just say, with anything having changed hands, I will say unsolicited. In my previous house, I am a satisfied customer of Connecticut Basement Systems.
Yeah, thank you. And so we started getting more and more dealers. And then I realized, hey, you know, our dealers, like our success, we make money selling products to these guys, but they only need more products if they sell more jobs. They only can sell more jobs if they're good at selling, but they also need more leads. They also need to do production right. And it does us no good if they they get started and 3 years later they go out of business. So we need to teach them leadership and, you know, financial mastery and so forth. So we started developing, you know, training and programs and processes and software for all of those things. And so, you know, that's what we do. We're a contractor that helps other contractors succeed. And that's essentially what we do. And then the story took all kinds of other twists and turns.
Anything about that you care to share? What are some of the lessons you feel like you've learned? I mean, because you have, you've had your share of battles. I mean, nothing is ever easy. You know, people look and they think, oh, you know, we got to start. And then it all just went really smoothly from there. But I mean, like anyone else, you know, it's always an ongoing process.
Yeah. I mean, one thing is, I've become the Mr. No Quit guy. I don't quit. And so I've been in the business for 42 years, in my own business, and it just keeps getting better and better and better and better every year. And I think a lot of people, business people think about, you know, if I can only get enough money to retire, right? If I could Yep. you know, make enough money, if I could sell out, right? And I can retire early, you know, and that's what they think about. And, you know, I used to think about, you know, I mean, you always think about money. You're in business. You have to be a good steward of your business because, you know, if you blow it financially, you know, everybody goes home and you're toast,
right.
You know,
right.
So you're always thinking about money, but, you know, making money is, you know, it's something that people think about earlier in their life and earlier in their career, but hopefully you get to a level of maturity where you realize, this is far more than, you know, just about money. It's about, you know, making an impact, positive impact in the world through your business. And, you know, because when I come to work, I'm the king, right? Everybody listens to me. And, you know, they don't tell me my ideas are stupid. Although hopefully you have relationships where they can.
Right.
I mean, my people do, but you know, if your name is on the sign and on, you know, it says CEO after you have the responsibility to your employees and to your customers. Right. And so it's an opportunity to make a positive impact in the world. Okay. So you're like king of your own kingdom. And, you know, if you retired and went home and sat on a beach with a Mai Tai, I think a feeling of, you know, worthlessness could creep into the average entrepreneur right away because you're not king anymore. Nobody cares who you are, you know.
And also, I think, you know, it's true for anyone who really is mission driven as opposed to money driven. And from what I hear you saying, it sounds like you are mission driven. And like every good leader, you seem to realize, you know, as someone who leads a company and who does hold the responsibility, not just for serving your customers, but also, you know, I mean, just as someone who is the CEO or the president or the leader, you know, there are people who answer to you in the workplace. And so the fact is that you hold not just the livelihood, but the day-to-day happiness of a lot of people in your hands.
Yeah.
And that's a real responsibility that I think a lot of people who run companies don't really think about.
Yeah. And you know, you're the steward of your enterprise and the people in it. And, you know, they're counting on you to do the right thing. I mean, all your employees are betting their future on you, you know,
as yes.
Is this leader going to take us to the promised land? Does he got this?
I hope he got this.
Okay. Because I got a family to feed, you know, and, you know, but I think the purpose of life, if you will, is to be the best person that you can be, in service to other people.
And agreed.
I don't mean that in an altruistic way. But you know, use the talents that you've been given, and we've all been given different talents. I don't expect everybody to do what I do, or be like me. But and you know, I mean, when it comes to you know, there's all kinds of talents that people have. You know, caring for the sick. I mean, that's not me. Okay, but thank God there's people that do that. You know, so follow what you are made to do. And I believe, I mean, I've never been a huge religious person, but you know, I really believe that, you know, there's some, you know, higher intelligence out there that, you know, made people with different talents for different reasons. It takes all kinds of different people to, you know, make society go. Some are, you know, artists, and some are teachers, and some are caregivers, and some are leaders, and some are, you know, work with their hands, and some, you know, are very patient, and some are good at thinking, and you know, so you just need to find what it is that you were made to do, and go for it, and be the best person you can be, and use that talent in making others' lives better. And hopefully, you know, you can make some money at that, so you can support yourself and your family. And there's all kinds of opportunities to do that, obviously. But anyway, my talent is, you know, leadership. And it's not something I was born with, okay, but I have this tendency. I have ambition, I have desire, and I have self-discipline. And I don't quit. And
I was about to say, it sounds like you have the great Yankee Institute strength of tenacity. You hang in there, you don't give up, you keep going.
Yeah.
Larry, I think we'll probably turn this into a two-part podcast. Thank you so much for taking this time to talk with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for being with us. We look forward to having you again on another edition of YCT Matters.
I'll show you around this place I call home.